Welcome to the most words ever. In a kind of funny title. Holy hell, kind of funny. It ranks and reviews Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Of course, I'm Tim Geddes, and I'm joined by, it's Christmas in February, Joey Noel.
Hello.
The producer slash seducer, Nick Scarpino. I was wondering if we were going to start off with it.
Oh, we're going deep into it, man.
Good, 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 good. And, of course, we have the Nitro Rifle, Andy Cortez.
Great afternoon to be here, everybody.
And making his kind of funny in-review debut, the one and only, you know him from the number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7th best video game website there is, GameSpot.com, Timur Hussein.
I'm here. I'm ready to get into some monkey business. Just got to monkey around a bit. I've got various monkey-related jokes and puns ready.
Good. Perfect. Good.
I'm lying. I don't have any ready, but I'm sure I'll come up with some over the course of the next few.
This one's going to be bananas. I am absolutely sure of that. Now, before we even get into this, there's a couple things I want to talk about. First off, I was lied to. I was lied to by every single person here. That's not fully true, but a lot of people did lie to me because the reason we're doing this is Matt Reeves' The Batman comes out in theaters in a few short weeks. And I was like, oh, we have 3 spots, 3 weeks open. What should we do? I was like, oh, it'd be fun to do what everyone's referred to as the Matt Reeves Planet of the Apes trilogy. How shocked was I to see directed by and not Matt Reeves' name come up? This movie, not directed by Matt Reeves. So that's a fun, interesting thing. Second thing. I have been plagued by this film for a decade now, because what you just saw Nick do, and I'm sure you've seen Nick do it many times over the course of all of our shows or our panels or anytime Andy Serkis has ever come up. If the origin of Nick Scarpino's Andy Serkis beef is this movie, specifically back when we were at IGN. What happened, Nick?
Do you remember? Are you talking about the Comic-Con problem? Mm-hmm. The Comic-Con fiasco? Mm-hmm. I don't remember the specifics of it, but I do remember that at one point Andy Serkis was just everywhere. Mm-hmm. He was nowhere, and then he was everywhere. And I couldn't pick Andy Serkis out of a lineup because all he did was motion capture for like characters' eyeballs, and everyone's like, "Oh, he's so glorious, Andy Serkis! Do you see the realistic eyeball movement on Gollum? Get out of here, Andy Serkis!"
That's not the story I was looking for. When I was talking about Nick was I think that was like part two of it, but part one was we were at IGN, and I was talking to you about like different trips that you've been on, different things that you had to do, and you had to help with a junket for this movie. With Andy Serkis, and you weren't there, but you had to help edit it, and you had to look at all the footage, and that's why you're so upset about Andy Serkis moving. It's because you had to for hours look at him acting like a monkey.
That's hilarious. I totally forgot about that, but yeah, you're spot on. And you know, obviously, really at the root of it is I just don't like people more talented and more successful than me. And unfortunately, I need there to be a focus for that anger and that insecurity, and Andy Serkis was just my guy. It does also have a B effect, like a side effect that's pretty fun, that it pisses Andy off, our Andy Serkis.
And can anyone tell me the name of the video game in which Andy Serkis motion captures a monkey?
Peter, what's his name's King Kong.
That's no.
Not a video game?
It was a video.
It was an Xbox 360 launch title. Quick 1,000 points.
How did I forget the Xbox 360 launch title? My bad.
It was bad.
What is it, Tim?
It is Enslaved Odyssey to the West, in which he plays Monkey, the main character of Journey to the West.
I did not know that. That's incredible. I also didn't know that Andy Serkis, this wasn't the first time he played a monkey. I guess it was his third time because Enslaved was one of them. He was also King Kong in Peter Jackson's King Kong. Yep. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that shit.
Do you know the other video game that he played a mocap character in?
Was it his very own Planet of the Apes VR game?
No, it's not the one that I'm thinking of, but he played King Bohan in Ninja Theory's Heavenly Sword PlayStation 3 launch title, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah, and he does an amazing job in that game. Like he worked very closely with Ninja Theory and Tamim Antoniadis on a lot of video game stuff. So a lot of the mocap stuff that they're amazing at, they're like collaborated with Andy Serkis in the early days to learn a lot. So he's got Nick a deep kind of rooting in video games.
I'm moving. How hard is it? We've been moving all our lives. Not that hard.
Let's get into it and let's have some fun. Of course, this is Kinda Funny's In Review, where each and every week we get together to rank, review, and recap different movie franchises. Right now, like I was saying, we're doing the modern Planet of the Apes trilogy, leading into Matt Reeves' The Batman, which we're all very, very excited for. You can get the show on youtube.com/kindoffunny or roosterteeth.com. You can also get it as a podcast by searching your favorite podcast service for Kinda Funny In Review, and we'll be right there for you. If you wanted to get the show ad-free, if you wanted to watch it live as it's being recorded, and that's it, you got to go to patreon.com/kindoffunny, just like our Patreon producers Gordon McGuire, Molecule, at James Davis Makes, and Pranksy have done. We appreciate you all so very, very much. Today we're brought to you by ExpressVPN and Chime, but I'll get to that later because I want to talk about Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Andy, do you know the font used for this, the logo treatment of Rise of the Planet of the Apes?
Oh no, I don't.
It is a font. There's a font called Simeon.
Ah, wow.
Makes sense.
Pretty good.
There you go. There you go. The movie had a runtime of an hour and 45 minutes. It was released on August 5th, 2011, directed by Rupert Wyatt, an English screenwriter, director, and producer. He made his directorial debut in 2008 with The Escapist, which premiered at Sundance. His second film was Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and his third film was the 2019 sci-fi film Captive State. So he hasn't done too much stuff. Music was done by Patrick Doyle, who is Kenneth Branagh's right-hand dude. He did Harry Potter, Goblet of Fire, the Brave soundtrack, Thor, and this. And I want to give him a shout-out, because a lot of this movie doesn't have dialogue, so a lot of it has to be carried by kind of just the atmosphere and ambiance of it all. And I thought they did a pretty damn good job with it.
Do we know why Matt Reeves ended up taking over? Was there probably like a creative difference thing, sort of thing happening? Because really unique thing to happen. Like, it's kind of odd that suddenly he's gone and then Matt Reeves just pops off with parts 2 and 3.
I don't know that they were like 100% set that this was going to be a whole series. Because remember, like, nobody when this movie came out was clamoring for like a reboot of Planet of the Apes. My guess is that they were like, we'll see how well this does and then get a second one in the pipeline. Because I think the second one, when did the second one come out, Tim?
I want to say 2014.
So a couple years later?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Reports said
that Wyatt was leaving the sequel due to his concerns that a May 2014 release date would not give him enough time to properly make the film.
Wyatt
wanted to do Dawn, but he felt Fox's summer 2014 release date didn't give him enough time, so he stepped down and decided to do the drama The Gambler instead. Comes from Collider.
It's a big gamble right there.
Hey, yeah. We're bringing it to heat today. Yeah. This movie had a budget of $93 million and had a box office of $481.8 million. Yeah, and it was nominated for an Oscar for best visual effects, but it did not win. There's a whole bunch of really cool facts about it. One of the first movies to use motion capture in an on-location setting. Previously, motion capture was limited to special studio setup with special motion capture cameras in very clearly defined surroundings. So that's kind of cool, them pushing the tech forward there. And then one other stat that I wanted to read here was the climax on the Golden Gate Bridge was shot on a 400-foot set, which was at the time the world's record for a production set. So that's very cool.
That's cool.
And although the climax of the film seems to have an awful lot of apes running about San Francisco, Rupert Wyatt planned this based on real populations of apes in America, particularly a facility in San Bruno that houses 70 to 80 apes. Taking the entire country into account, there are approximately 3,000 great apes in labs across the U.S. About 300,000 chimpanzees alone are found in the wild. So, cool.
Do we have wild chimpanzees here? I would not have thought that. For some reason, I just thought that's not a real thing. But I also, when I think about America, I think most of it's just cities, which I know is the opposite. Most of it is actually just not cities.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? You think about America, you're like, it's got to be maybe, what, like 2-3 foresty areas. The rest of it's just suburb housing tracts.
And these are the men you let rank the states.
This is our best episode yet.
I love it so much. All right, I want to start this off with Joey Noel. Wait, hold on. First off, has everyone seen this movie before? Except
I have not.
Yes.
I have not.
I have.
Okay. So me and Joey are new to all this. Very cool. Joey, what'd you think?
So you asked me if I wanted to do this. I was like, yeah. And then I started looking into it and I was like, oh, this is like way more like sci-fi-y, I think, than I was thinking it was going to be. And the whole week I was like, is this a bad idea for me to do this? Like, these are not usually the kinds of movies that I sign on to do In Review for. But as I watched last night, I was pleasantly surprised. I had a really fun time. I like James Franco. I think the John Lithgow part with his dad is interesting. I'm of course never going to be mad that Logan Roy is showing up in different movies. What's his name? Brian Cox. So he was in it. I was like surprisingly attached to this relationship between Caesar and James Franco. I thought the action and like the evolution of the ape side of stuff was fun. The one thing that didn't work for me, which like in the realm of the movie is the part that I least care about, is like the weird like romance stuff with like his girlfriend / the vet girl. I'm like,
yeah,
I could have absolutely done without that, and I didn't think it was like a huge part of the actual movie. But this movie is weird because there's such a suspense of belief for so much of it, because it's like, can you just walk around with an ape, monkey, chimpanzee, I'm still not really quite sure on where the delineation, on a leash in the middle of the Redwoods Park? Like, I'm confused a little bit about that part of like how they integrate into the world, or if that was just like hey, you can just have this monkey and nobody's gonna care that you have one in your house, even after it attacks people.
There's a part with the neighbor where he's like, I've told you multiple times to keep that monkey out of my yard. I'm like, oh, the neighbor knows you have a monkey?
Totally.
He didn't call animal control services? Like, dude, if my next door neighbor showed up with a fucking, it had a 5'6", like, I'll eat your face chimpanzee sitting next to me, I'd be like, I'm calling someone. I'm Googling and the first number I find, I'm calling.
I haven't been in San Francisco for a long time. But there are things that I see in San Francisco constantly that I'm like, how and why? And everyone just ignores it. Like, I've seen, like, and like someone dropping trout and curling out a massive dookie in the middle of the road is like the bottom end of that stuff. So, like, I ask you, if you were walking down somewhere in San Francisco and turned and you saw a man with a chimp on a leash, would you step in and be like, is that allowed, mate? I don't think you would.
I mean, I'm not saying anything, no matter what. Though I feel like there is a size factor where, like, if it's the bigger it is, the more concerned I feel like if it's like a dog size, then I am.
Yeah, because like, no one would question Ross when he had his little monkey and friend.
Here's what I think what would happen. That monkey was tiny. Someone would take a picture and then it would be on Twitter with the quote tweet, look at this man abusing this chimp by putting him in a shirt and trousers. And that is what the controversy will become, instead of there is a chimp walking around San Francisco.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. There'd be a BuzzFeed article that was like, Bennett backs guy with chimpanzee in pants. Why can't chimps wear pants?
Yeah, chimpanzee is now influencer on Instagram. Yeah.
There was a TikTok video that's going viral now of people walking into a theater with a ladder. And the concept is, if you're walking with a ladder, you can get in anywhere and no one's going to question anything because they think you're a worker. I think that if you have the monkey gets big enough and you have him on a leash, no one's asking questions because you look like you know what you're doing when you're walking in the woods. They're like, oh, this guy must be here with this monkey for a reason. You know what I mean? I would just trust.
I want to tell you all about a moment that I almost went viral to the point where I likely could have left kind of funny. I could have bought kind of funny, possibly. I was walking down the street and I saw a lady walking a pig. And
in San Francisco.
In San Francisco, yeah.
I 100% seen that girl.
I was so close to recording her and being like, look at that pig. And then, like, move the camera down and it'd be a pig and be like, oh, wow, that's like a clever thing. Because we thought he was insulting the woman, but there was she's walking a pig. And I almost went viral there, but I didn't think to record it.
I want to say earlier, Tim, when you
thought about this, like, several minutes later.
When you talk about holding the ladder, I thought in my mind, I imagined someone holding a chimp, but as if it was the ladder, just like completely horizontal.
I didn't know where he was going with that either, Tim. I was like, are two guys holding the chimp?
Anyway, Joey, continue.
Oh no, I mean, that's it. I had way more fun with this than I thought I was going to. I thought that this was going to be hard for me to watch, and I would like really have to make myself concentrate and not be on my phone. But I had a really good time. I'm excited to see where the rest of this goes, because this is way better than I expected it to be. And the way that people talk about the rest of the series, I feel like the addition of Matt Reeves and him helming the rest of them, I think, puts me really excited to watch the rest.
Yeah, I'm gonna jump in now as the other person that hasn't seen it yet. This was my first time. I was so pleasantly surprised because I had heard such good things about 2 and 3. And I never really heard any horrible things about 1, but I never heard about it talked about in the same regards as 2 and 3. And then when I saw it wasn't directed by Reeves, I was like, uh-oh, like we're probably in for something bad here. And I gotta say, I really loved this movie. Like, I don't think it's perfect. I don't like the romance stuff. And the scene where the scientist guy kind of turns out of nowhere is just like, no, we're gonna do this, and James Franco's like, I don't think it's safe, I quit. And it's like, this is so bad and unnecessary. But I feel like besides those elements, this movie just works way better than I expected it to. Mm-hmm. And had so many hype moments that by the time we get to the Golden Gate Bridge and it's all out war against these monkeys, and like every single set piece that they do just like keeps getting more and more exaggerated, it's very much speaking to Tim Geddes and the dumb type of shit that I like. But it's dumb stuff that I think was wrapped in a way smarter container than I expected from this movie. James Franco, obviously, a lot of issues as a person. I really enjoy him as an actor. And seeing him in this, I him and Caesar, I believed in them. The effects really impressed me. Obviously, some of them don't hold up fidelity-wise and all the ways. But I love the courage they had to really just kind of fucking go for it. I was reading facts. There's not a single monkey in this movie that that is real. Everything is CG. And I'm like, that's kind of nuts to think
everything?
About. Yeah, every including single James one. Franco. Yeah, crazy.
What's
crazy.
I mean, Tim, on that point, that's interesting because the parts of the movie that stuck out CG wise to me were the parts that they where the ape was moving, or monkey, which I guess I don't want to use wrong terminology. I'll call Caesar a monkey. I think that's correct. When he's young, that looked bad. When he's flipping around all over the place and jumping around a little playpen, which, by the way, how much is that house worth in fucking San Francisco? Because that's like
also where in San Francisco is that house? Feet.
Yeah, it's incredible. But I will say one of the things that really sells this for me, to be in all honesty, is how Caesar moves when Caesar becomes Caesar. And that is a testament to who I forget the guy's name that does the motion capture for Caesar. But that guy should do more work. He did a great job.
I fucking love you so much, you piece of shit. But yeah, no, real talk. I was so surprised by this. And like, this is one of the rare times on In Review that I'm like, fuck, I do not want to wait a week to see the next movie. Like, I am so in. I loved how they ended this. I was just so surprised. And like, I think that maybe this movie's not as good as I am saying it is right now. And it's just like my genuine surprise at how much I enjoyed it. But I'll get to you in 1 second, Nick. Just what I really liked was it was way more Deep Blue Sea than I expected. It was more kaiju movie than I expected, but it kind of played with that in ways that I didn't expect. I didn't expect the end of this movie to kind of be, it's not like, oh, they won or they won. It's kind of like, oh, the monkeys are just out there. Like,
that leads me to my question.
You're gonna have to deal with this.
How, like, Joey, you haven't seen the second one yet either, right?
Correct. I haven't seen any
and
of them.
Tim, you haven't seen them, but the rest of us have. Mm-hmm. Where do you think the second movie goes?
I mean, I don't know. I've seen the trailers for them so long ago that I have no context for it. Okay. But like, the idea that they're setting up and bunkering down in Muir Woods is just so fucking incredibly dope. And like, this movie ending with James Franco kind of just being like, Caesar being like, I'm home. And James Franco be like, all right, cool, dude. I feel you. I just didn't see that coming. I really, really, really enjoyed it. So.
I am fascinated to see how you react to the second one.
Yeah.
Just that's all I'll say.
Cool.
I want to see if it's at all where your expectations went for that. But I'll mirror everything you guys have said, right? I think this movie kind of knows exactly what it was. It found a way to have some heart, and I think it got in and got out. There is a better movie in there somewhere if you fleshed out some of these moments, specifically with James Franco. Tim, you brought up the fact that he turns pretty quickly when he realizes, like, oh my God, this thing's not going to help my dad and my dad's past, and what have I been doing? That could have been a lot more of an emotional beat. Pinto's character could have been a lot more integrated in this, but we don't need that. The movie is short. It gets in. It has a lot of heart, and it makes you sympathize. At its best, it makes you sympathize with Caesar, who is the main character of the film, and you actually feel for him when he goes to that. The Striker's Island or whatever it is, where he has to fight all the other monkeys.
Striker's Island. That's hella funny.
It's hilarious that you guys are calling him by his succession name, because we all know him as Striker. Stop messing around. He's either Striker or he's the great comic relief, or not comic relief, but like the straight guy from Super Troopers.
It's great that Succession has two Strikers, by the way.
Oh, that's right. It does have the other Striker. You were talking about that. I got to start watching that show. Maybe I'll do that in 6 years and then bug you guys about
Striker?
It.
The one guy, Joe, the other really old guy who...
Like Frank or Tom.
Yeah,
or something.
One of those dudes. Yeah. He lies to Brian Cox and he's like, we got the deal. And then really they're like, we didn't get the deal. Like, and he's like, are you kidding me? He's all mad. Remember that part? Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I like this.
That sounds
one.
Like every Succession scene ever. Every single one.
I when I saw this in theaters, I was pleasantly surprised by how good of a movie they made with the material about, let's be honest, to Joey's point, a pretty big suspension of disbelief that you have to for the most part, just for all the stuff that's going on here. Just the amount of times that people are able to just take this highly top secret like thing out and just start using it on people, which is just completely absurd and morally repugnant. But yeah, I mean, shout out to the guys that made this. And man, this series, it just goes from here.
That's very exciting to hear. Andy Cortez, what did you think?
It'd been my first time in a long time watching this one. And I think much like you, Tim, based on what you'd heard about two and three, you hadn't heard much about one. And I kind of feel like I talked a lot about two and three and not a whole lot about one. I like this movie a lot. I think it does. I think it sets up tension really well. I think that I hate Tom Felton and all the, like, everybody's just way too cartoony. It's an absolute joke how they act. Like, it's like two different production crews were running like different sets of actors. And like that sequence when him and all his homies walk in and they're like, you fucking monkey. Like, it's like, what is this? This is so like, this is the most unbelievable thing about the whole movie is the way him and his friends act.
And that they can just go and drink beer with the monkeys.
It's mostly just Tom Felton playing Draco Malfoy again, like,
yeah, just with, like, a bad American accent. Yeah,
it's kind of he's really the only character that takes it out, because the other guy that's with him, the Rodney character, the guy that's kind of like he bullies a little bit, I think is still in the world. And the Brian Cox character, he's like, he's getting a paycheck. He was like, I just showed up to get paid in this movie.
Yeah, but the guy who gets bullied is like the cartoonishly version on the other side of the spectrum in terms of personality. Like, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, gosh. Like, he's just it's all bad. Like, all the villain parts in this movie are pretty bad. But I love the way the escalation of action begins. I love Caesar. It's kind of interesting to me watching him throw out the canisters to get all the apes kind of, you know, they get all the serum or whatever the hell. But it's funny watching James Franco pick up that serum later. And it's like, oh, Caesar's hands are gigantic. That's right. Like, James Franco picks it up and that's a gigantic canister of stuff that's kind of, and there's three or four of them or whatever. I just love the way it all seems to make sense and be rational in this world that they've created. Like, nothing that happens with the apes is too overly weird for me. I love the setup of him letting the gorilla finally out and then them kind of showing everybody like, I'm the fucking master here. Right. You all like talk to me. And then the bullying of that one ape to kind of show him like, hey dude, let me rub your hand. All right. I'm going to rub your fucking hand really gently because you know that I'm now the master. All that shit is just so cool. Yeah. And so
that's
set up.
Honestly, Andy, that's what I do to Tim or to Greg every time I see him. I say, you get on your fucking knees and you put your hand out and I'll rub your hand.
Does it always remind you of the Sun's Going Down big guy from the Marvel Cinema?
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's exactly what I think of. I was like, oh, everyone's a Hulk.
Anyway, yeah. And then all of that set up to just kind of end the movie in a really neat way. I kind of wished we saw a bit more. I didn't love James Franco's reaction to it. I kind of wish there was a bit more fear there as opposed to like, he is free now. Because like they a lot of people are dead. The whole bridge is on fire. Like, I kind of wish, like, when he said, I'm home, I wish that we saw a different reaction to James Franco. Like, okay, yeah, you're home. Like, holy fuck, what's going on right now? I wanted a bit more disbelief and fear out of James Franco there as opposed to like, this is going to end great, you know, like a lot of bad shit just happened. But I think the movie's great. And I'm so, so excited now to watch parts two and three.
Andy, what if when he's like, no, Caesar is home, James Franco turned around and was like, so good.
Spider-Man reference.
Yeah. Rise.
Tam. Rise.
I really like this movie. I think it's worth pointing out the fact that this is like a new entry in a movie, not franchise, but like in the lineage of a movie that's massively important to cinema history, right? Like Planet of the Apes is iconic as a film, and And I remember the trepidation around a new entry being made and like the follow-ups. I think there were a couple of follow-ups, right, to the original Planet of the Apes.
And there's like seven original, yeah. I think. And then in 2001, there was a Tim Burton, Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah,
Mark
and as far as I know, like it's all been absolutely terrible.
Tim Burton did it? Oh my God.
So the first
I
one
almost watched absolute... that last night, and then I was like, there's no way this is the right one.
Yeah, no. I was gonna say, the first Planet of the Apes was actually is a great, cool concept, especially with the twist at the end.
You guys exactly. A couple of the originals are cool.
Yeah.
They're not all bad.
Yeah, yeah.
And they make reference to that in this as well, which is cool.
Yeah, yeah. And like the fact that they managed to successfully pull off one movie in that kind of lineage is pretty awesome. The fact that they did it three movies, I think, is pretty amazing. I think it's a very lean film, and I think that speaks to a lot of the things, the criticisms and the positives that we have for it. Because it's lean, it can be really focused on the relationship between Caesar and James Franco's character, and also Caesar and the other apes, monkeys, over time. But at the same time, like you all said, there are aspects of the characterization and the narrative that are hard pivots and kind of you have to suspend your disbelief in a lot of ways. There are, like you said, I first of all, Frida Pinto, like, incredible. Firstly, absolutely stunning. Like, she popped up and I was like, damn, she is hot. And where has she been?
Yeah,
like, I've not seen you in ages. Yeah, she's but like she commits the cardinal sin that Hollywood or anyone does with like South Asian or brown characters. They cast a brown person and they give him a white name. So her name is Carolyn, and I'm like, Carolyn? Is your name Carolyn? Is it? It's like me when I studied drama, and in all of our performances, I played a character named Dave, and I'm like,
Bill.
Why am I Dave? Why am I Bill? Do I look like a Bill? And people are like, shut up, Bill. Just get into your alliance.
Jesus. The fuck up, William.
Yeah. But like, yeah, I think the core of the movie, which is Caesar and James Franco's character, what is his name? Will?
Will.
Oh, yeah. Shit, he's a Bill as well. Fuck.
Yeah. Will. Will Rodman.
Will. I think that is so strong, and I think like I don't know if this is relevant or not, but like back in the day, there were so many of these movies that were like man meets monkey or human meets monkey and they form a bond, and you know, Mighty Joe Young and all these other kind of movies, and they were like everyone loved
Congo.
Those loved those movies.
The original one that started all was Gorillas in the Mist for me. You guys remember that movie? It was good. It was a good movie.
Does it hold up?
I don't know if it holds up or not, but it's a dramatic movie. It's not an action movie, but it's Sigourney Weaver playing a character that basically was like one of the first, like, I guess, American scientists to go study gorillas in the Congo. And she like bonds with them. And I just remember it being like unbelievably good when I was a kid. I also when I was a kid thought everything Sigourney Weaver did was unbelievable. It got nominated for like Academy Awards, I think. I'm not crazy.
And also there's something about like humans bonding with monkey movies that really works on people. Like if it lands hard. And if it doesn't, like you're just like whatever. But I'm one of those people who really love that genre of monkey friend movie. Yeah. And for me, like this one, the stuff with Caesar growing up and the connection that he makes with Will and then Will's dad, and it really, really, really works on me. And each emotional beat, like when they leave Caesar in the kind of holding area, like even though I've seen that movie a few times, I was like, oh, this is gut-wrenching. It really hurts. And you're like, why are you doing this to him? And then it kind of like because of that, all the kind of turns that he takes really, really land. I think it's a really strong film that lands its dramatic kind of intention. And despite the fact that it is clearly ridiculous, like it is completely unbelievable, but like you do like for a moment, like it's very good at making you suspend your belief. And it does that by emotional manipulation, which is like and the reason it can do that, because it's got really strong writing, it's got really strong performances, and it's got really strong music as well. And the small moments with, you know, Caesar just reacting in certain ways, or even just when he hugs someone and you can see him like put his whole body around them, like there's something around that kind of connection that you're like, this is really sweet. And it really, really, the manipulation, emotional manipulation that happens in this movie is very, very potent, I think.
That's interesting that you talk about the disbelief of it, because I'm the type of person that, like, all I need is the explanation that this serum, we're trying to cure Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. and we're testing it on apes. Oh shit, this one is actually like getting a lot smarter. And that's kind of all I need. I think that, like, again, the most unbelievable part of this movie is Tom Felton and the way he and his cronies act. And even Brian Cox would agree. Yeah, he's pretty much just Stryker in this movie, I feel. But it's all fantastical, right? In kind of its concept. But not a whole lot happened after that made me go, oh, I don't believe this is happening, because like the apes are smart now. They're just smart monkeys right now. So like,
but I think
they're on a different level of like IQ, to where it's like mm-hmm. they're more than just following the leader of the pack. Now they are like Caesar, and they've awakened themselves. So I don't know, like everything that happened from then on out, I'm okay with it, and I'm not being like, ah, that wouldn't fucking happen. Like them knocking over the bus to push it over, it's like, this is cool as shit, dude.
Damn. Yeah, I mean, go ahead, Tim.
Go ahead, Nick. No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, for me, it works because, you know, you always hear that apes are like, you know, highly intelligent, and there are monkeys and apes that get taught sign language and things like that. So it's not that big of a belief, but I do think that for the beginning of the, or disbelief, but I think the beginning of the movie does a good job of setting up that his intelligence gets progressively better and better and better as he ages because of this, the DNA that he comes from, which I think really goes a long way toward at the end when he just pops a canister and overnight the monkeys are like, hello, I'd like to do some math now. It's completely outlandish. You're like, whatever, I'm already in for a penny, in for a pound on this one. But I will say that, yeah, to Tom Felton's character, they were like, what's your direction? He's like, what's my direction here? And the director was like, have you seen you in Harry Potter? And he's like, yes. And they go, cool, do the adult version of that. And don't worry that everyone else in the scene is not in the same movie as you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. The suspension of disbelief for me is like, it's never the evolutionary part of it with the monkeys and the apes. It's always the like society part where it's like, even at the beginning when he like takes Caesar to, after he gets cut or whatever, and takes him to go see
to the zoo.
Name.
Yeah. He takes her to the zoo. Like, you can just walk a wild animal into the zoo and be like, can you take care of this monkey for me? No, do you have to go like an exotic animal veterinarian?
It's all that kind of stuff where it's like, how do you just get and no one questions that you have this monkey and you worked in this lab? Like, that's the stuff that I think is harder for me.
To be clear, the suspension of disbelief stuff for me is primarily focused on the humans. Is focused on the humans. Mm-hmm. The humans are constantly doing wild shit, and specifically, like the what's it called? Stephen Jacobs' character and anyone involved in the actual experimentation, like the way they just like flaunting and kind of casually being like, "Yeah, we'll try experiment with this. We'll cast that one off. Yeah. Let's kill all those apes. Let's start again. Let's get it going. Let's just, you know, there's clearly an epidemic about to pop off, like a virus." And like, he's like, "Yeah, don't worry about it. We're going to make some money. Finger guns. Let's go, baby."
Yeah.
And then it's like, what are you talking about? Yeah. And then like, you know, Caesar like getting out, eating someone's finger. And then, you know, everyone else is just like, oh, that's disgusting. And like backing off slightly, as opposed to like being like terrified and screaming and running away and that kind of stuff. It's the humans more than the apes, I think.
Yeah, the neighbor also acts pretty unbelievably.
Yeah.
A lot of he's a comically bad like villain character.
Yeah.
Where he's just like the biggest point of disbelief for me is when John Lithgow's character goes into sort of he relapses with his Alzheimer's and takes the guy's car, which is open for some reason. I'm not quite sure. Maybe the guy just randomly got out of it to just run into the house, starts slamming it in. And then their neighbor goes, what are you doing, man? Are you going crazy? Like, what are you doing? Like, you wouldn't know that your neighbor's father has been suffering from Alzheimer's for the last fucking 10 years. And like, clearly he's having an episode. Like, this guy's just that part to me, I was like, that's a little bit ridiculous. Like, if that is true, this man that lives next door to you is a fucking evil bastard and just needs to be put in jail.
Deserved it. Yeah
or get his fucking finger bitten off. I'm like, we gonna call
so
it even?
They made the choice to not bite the finger off. In the original cut, his finger was bitten off, and the test crews were like turning on Caesar. Essentially, they're like, no, we want people rooting for Caesar. So yeah. Well, he just bites the finger and we go from there.
And that's, but I think, another one of the reasons.
Real quick, though, Nick.
Yeah.
Before you get to your point, let me tell you about our sponsors. Shout out to Chime for sponsoring this episode. New year, new you. Maybe a you who leaves behind things that don't serve you, like those dang overdraft fees. When your checking account balance is running low, the last thing you need is an overdraft fee. But with Chime, an award-winning app and debit card, you can save that hard-earned cash money without paying overdraft fees. Eligible members can overdraft up to $200 on debit card purchases and cash withdrawals with absolutely no overdraft fees. Make your first good decision in 2022 and join over 10 million people using Chime. Sign up only takes 2 minutes and doesn't affect your credit score. You can get started at chime.com/kfgames. That's chime.com/kfgames. Banking services provided by and debit card issued by the Bancorp Bank or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Overdraft only applies to debit card purchases and cash withdrawals. Limits start at $20 and may be increased up to $200 by Chime. See chime.com/spotme and go to chime.com/kfgames to get started. This episode is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Look, I get it. You don't watch porn, so maybe you're just paying attention to this ad for, you know, a friend. But with everything going on in the world, governments have increased surveillance. They're using your devices to track your location, movements, and in a lot of places, your internet activity. ExpressVPN reroutes your internet connection through a secure, encrypted server so you can surf the web anonymously. Newsflash, incognito mode is a sham. Your ISP can still see every single site you visit. But with one click of a button, ExpressVPN keeps others from seeing all the freaky stuff you've been looking at. Yeah, talking about you, Nick Scarpino. We've been using ExpressVPN for a long time. It's been keeping me safe, keeping me secure. I just feel better being out on the internet, knowing that ExpressVPN has my back. Protect your privacy today and get 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. Visit expressvpn.com/kindoffunny. That's expressvpn.com/kindoffunny for 3 months free with a 1-year package. Visit expressvpn.com/kindoffunny to learn more. What's up?
And I think, yet again, that's a smart choice from the filmmakers, right? Because we're on Caesar's side pretty much throughout this whole movie. Had he started biting people's fingers off and then ripping faces off and shit, it would have been very easy for them to go, oh, the apes are the bad guys, right? Because in the original Planet of the Apes, Charlton Heston's character was the good guy and he was just being persecuted by this planet of primates. But in this one, they were like, no, this is Caesar's story. It's about freedom. It's about, like, being able to, like, have a family and have a place and not be in a cage. And so he does a lot. There's a lot of little moments here of choices where even when he kills Tom Felton's character, he doesn't kill him. It's like in self-defense. And then he doesn't let them kill Rodney. They just put him in a cage and Rodney just is like, oh my God, you know. So there's all those moments. And even on the bridge, it's all still it could be written off as self-defense, which I think was really smart because you get to that point in the bridge and you go, I actually want these apes to be free. I want Caesar and his people to be free. I want them to go into Muir Woods, even though my gut tells me they're just going to hire a bunch of army people to come in and kill these things, but at least they get a shot of having freedom. And I think that speaks to why we like the movie and vibe with it.
Another thing there is there's a deleted scene on the Blu-ray even of it being Caesar that throws the guy off the bridge, and then they changed it to be the other one because they're like, no, Caesar needs to be the good guy.
Caesar is doing a clean hands run of this movie. Like, he's doing kills, no alerts. That's what he's doing.
Let me tell you, dude, when you got Koba and he's got that fucking dead eye because he's seen some shit, like he's got the dead eye and like the half gone like face.
God, that's really so cool.
That's the guy you bring in to kick the chopper off the bridge for sure.
Yeah. Andy Cortez, please hit me with the plot.
Yeah.
What's even coming? I don't even know what this is.
It's not even funny. I just kind of blanked right now.
Let's talk some apes right now with Nick. That monkey is Andy Serkis.
That's a song called Monkey Wrench by Foo Fighters.
And with that, Nick Scarpino, tell us the plot of Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Welcome to the jungle, folks. The mighty jungle. We see a group of apes that are just minding their own business when humans come in to harsh their mellow. Chimp 9, as he'll be called for a couple seconds, or gets trapped in a box, or she'll be called, and screams as the family watches her being hauled off to a facility. We were entered Gensis. Turns out the chimp is smart, and James Franco, probably the most unbelievable thing here, is a doctor. Andy from Kind of Funny.
I'm kind of shocked by Tim's fact that no ape in this movie is real, because there were some shots in these opening sequences that I thought, oh, they're using real apes for this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But clearly a lot of the movement is fake CGI. I thought a lot of the close-ups were actual just apes because of just how perfectly they captured the movement of, like, a scared ape kind of looking around. It was just fucking brilliantly done. God damn.
It's funny you say that, because in the fact, they specifically say all of the apes are 100% computer generated, including the apes in the opening scene during the capture of Bright Eyes, which really is unbelievable.
That's really damn good.
Are we 100% sure? Is it like when Amazon says, no, everyone who works here definitely likes working here?
I saw multiple people talking about it in interviews and shit, so I think that that's one of their, like, claims to fame with all of it.
But I also want to say, like, that scene lost a minute, and it is so effective at showing audience, like, humans bad, apes good. Like, these are the people, because the humans are extremely, like, aggressive in the way they move, and the final shot of, like, the ape in the cage, and the way it kind of, like, it frames just the face, and she's, like, panicking and, like, breathing, and you can see, like, the other apes just kind of, like, in the distance just watching. So effective. Again, manipulation of emotions just by using, like, appealing to our base instincts of trying, like, this is an innocent animal that's being victimized by these humans, so you know who you should be rooting for immediately.
We are introduced to ALZ-1112, which is a serum that they're trying to, over at Gensis, they're trying to develop to battle Alzheimer's. They give it to Bright Eyes, and voila, full cognitive recovery. My question is, Andy, you know how, like, in Congress, Andy, when they make the bill, but then they, like, put a bunch of other stuff in the bill that could, like, that they don't, kind of works with it, but it's like, you know, you got an infrastructure bill, but you're also like, let's make sure everyone's got money
for free pizza every Friday. So
do you think when they do this, do you think, would it kill them to also be like, it'll also make an inch and a half taller?
A little
extra, you know?
Inject that in me immediately.
You're gonna be able to think and also just be the height that you want to be. Anyway, ALZ-1112's gene therapy will cause neurogenesis or the cure of Alzheimer's.
You're gonna be able to think and be the height you want to be. The two things most wanted by humans.
Just saying, dude, I have both those things for the rest of my life. I'm dominating. But it has a side effect. It apparently makes the chimps hyper violent. They try and capture Bright Eyes, who breaks out here they're trying to get her out of the cage with some Mountain Dew game fuel. It works for Andy, but it does not work for Bright Eyes. She's not jonesing for that sweet, sweet stuff. Bright Eyes goes nuts, and they shoot her in front of the board of directors right before the board was about to vote to push this thing into human trials. Jacobs orders the apes put down, but Franklin refuses. The board of directors pulls the drugs. Jacobs orders Will to start again. Meanwhile, Bright Eyes was, they discovered, was actually not being aggressive at all. She was being protective because she had just had a baby. Not too bright are these scientists. You want to talk about Bright Eyes? How did you not know this chimpanzee was pregnant? They have one throwaway line here. I was like, well, they don't really show that much. I'm like, really? Do they not show? Like, it's in a cage. You don't know. You didn't see some sort of.
Yeah, they say
something in there.
Yeah, they say they carry small, but, like, you were staring at that chimp for a long time, and you, like, taking it out of there, like, looking at his body, because they lay the monkeys on the little stretcher thing, which they, the shopping cart, which they wheel. At no point did anyone look down and go, we're not giving him that many bananas. Like, what's going on there?
He's getting a little exercise. But either way. Franklin has killed all the other apes, but he cannot bring himself to kill the baby. He gives Will the choice, the needle or take care of this baby. He's like, I'm out. Put it down or give it sanctuary, basically. Will's, Tam.
The dude who plays Franklin, have you seen him in anything else?
He looks
good. Because I saw him and I literally just realized what he is.
Yes, it's I've
Tucker
seen
and
him
Dale. Stuff. Tucker and Dale meet versus evil, whatever, versus evil. I just remembered why I'd recognize him. Okay, my bad, carry on.
Let's see. So we go back to Will's house where we meet John Lithgow, his father, Charlie, or Charles, who is suffering from Alzheimer's. One of the only things, of course, he can remember is his Shakespeare. So he's been trying to read Shakespeare. And, of course, he's reading the play Julius Caesar, which is where we'll get the name Julius Caesar. He quotes from that, and that becomes Caesar's name, little baby Caesar. And we see the telltale signs, of course, in his eyes of the green specks. That means that he has been affected by ALZ-1112. James Franco tries really hard to narrate Caesar's progress. And we get it. Caesar is...
Dude, I loved it, man. Was this part where it said age 3?
Yes.
On the screen?
Yeah. But it's like
let's go, man. This is the moment for the movie where I'm like, am I really into this? I think I'm really into this, because it was around here that I realized I haven't seen a trailer for this movie. All of this was brand new to me, and I was you didn't like it.
His VO here is so bad. It's like they sent him the script and he was on his way to the airport and they're like, can you just read it in, just, we just want to hear it come out of your mouth. Don't worry about it. Just read it into your phone and send us that. And then that's the one they went with. Either way.
What is it about the parts of this movie that I don't like that just really remind me of the Sony Spider-Man movies and Venom? Like, there's is it San Francisco? Is the fact that Venom is in SF? Like, I don't know what it is, but something about, like, anytime I'm witnessing a really an underwhelming scene, I'm immediately reminded of those movies. I have no idea why.
Back in the lab, Will steals a few vials of 1-1-12 for his father, whose condition has worsened. He gives his father the drug, and the next morning,
1-12 or 1-1-2.
1-1-12. That's right. 1112.
Peaches and creams.
Right, it tripped me out because it's ALZ. I want to say Arizona 1-12, but it's not. It's an Illinois. man. And his dad, of course, the next day is like, I play piano like a virtuoso. And he's like, wow, that's crazy, Dad. When did you learn how to play piano? And he goes, I have no idea. Caesar escapes and runs into his neighbor's yard because he wants to play with the kid. Will saves him. Important note, they have a little picture window that he looks out of, and he wants to be a part of your world, Tim. So he finally goes out, but Will saves him from their aggro asshole neighbor before he gets bashed in by a bat. Will takes Caesar to the zoo, and the other apes go wild. We introduced to Carolyn, Frida Pinto's character here. Who sutures up Caesar and doesn't ask one question at all. But she's like, I'm really impressed that you taught him how to sign. And meanwhile, he's signing fucking Sanskrit over here. And she's like, thinks nothing of it whatsoever. I guess she probably wouldn't jump to the conclusion. They're like, wait a minute. Did you give that monkey an experimental serum that made him hyper intelligent? I would think that now, but not after having, not before seeing this movie. Caesar's wingman's pretty hard for Will, and it works. He scores a date with the good doctor. Great little moment here where she's like, what's he saying?
It's interesting that Caesar has the ability to pick up on like interpersonal human dynamics as well, to the point where he was like, you two should shag.
He's wingmanning.
Like, yeah, that is insane. Like, they're smart, but like, I know like evolved humans who are incapable of looking at two people and going, they have chemistry. Yeah. But like, this monkey can be like, these two are made for each other.
Well, don't forget they have a hyper sense of smell.
The pheromones. He's like, goddamn, your pheromones between you two is all up my nostrils.
I can smell that boner right now.
He's literally like inside. He's signing, get a room, you two.
I can smell that boner right now. I can smell the smell of the cotton stretching in your pants.
Dude, no, we can stop. We all had our own visuals from what Andy said, Nick.
Boner is a funny word. Anyway, Caroline tells him that Caesar is fine now, but eventually he's going to grow into a very powerful animal. So they got to figure that out.
At this part, Gia looks over at me panicked. Like, she's like, wait, are they going to get big? Which is just so funny. And I was like, why? Even if they, I was like, I don't think they get big. I was like, I don't know. They might, but I don't think they get big. And even if they did, why does that upset you? She's like, do you remember Catwoman? I was like, I forgot how much the giant cat bothered you.
Oh my God. I forgot that was a thing.
I don't know.
Anyways, you can continue.
So they take Caesar over to the forest of Endor up in Muir Woods. And they also put pants on him.
Shout out to that. Because first off, Muir Woods is dope. Second off, yeah, they're straight up on Endor. Like, it is like the same place they shot the speeder bikes. And I just love that now there's monkeys there.
Absolutely. Adding to the lineage. They also put pants on Caesar for some reason. Not quite sure why. When they take him off the lease, Caesar asks for permission to go roam. And he's like, what is this monkey doing?
Now, they put pants on him for a reason. It was a reference to a real life monkey that learned stuff that liked to wear pants. I'm not making this up.
I'm not making it up.
I'm just trying to like sneak in the plot points to Dunstan checks in or something like that.
Curious George.
No, there was some. I need to look this up of what his name was, but it was he had some name like Ninston or some shit.
It's also
Ninston.
It's also smart to like show the stripping of humanity away later. Like it's all good kind of.
I actually watched the commentary, and it was actually to hide the monkey boner.
Got it.
The thing is, Tam, what have we learned today? You can hide it, but you can't hide the smell.
You can't hide the smell.
You can't hide the smell of the cotton, Tim. Anyway, Caesar asks for permission, and Will gives it to him, even though Will has no idea what that means, despite having worked and lived around monkeys for his entire fucking career. Yes, Tim.
Okay, so his name was Oliver.
I'm sorry, that's a far cry from Nunston. I think it's Ninston.
Your dentist is named Krentis.
Hear this out. Andy Serkis based Caesar's behavior on a chimpanzee named Oliver for the balance of behaving like a civilized chimp. His red shirt and black pants, his appearance, and his ability to sign well are based on another chimpanzee in science, Nim Chimpsky.
Okay. You're not as
Shout out to them naming a monkey after Noam Chomsky.
Yeah.
Caesar climbs high into the redwoods, and we cut to a montage of him growing into adulthood with the same pants, just like the Incredible Hulk. Like, how do they keep getting bigger? I guess they're stretchy pants. 5 years later, Will and Caroline are all smoochy, and Caesar wants in. This is the first time he starts thinking, "Yeah, I don't have a family or a life of my own. I don't really have any people. You do. So what's up?" Some random hikers have a problem with Caesar, and Caesar fucking lets them know when their dog starts barking, like, "Yo, bro, here's where you're at in the pecking order." Then we get another key moment here where Will opens up the hatchback for the wagon, and Caesar refuses, and he gets in the back seat instead, and opting for a normal seat. And then he asks, "Am I a pet?" And Will says, "No, you're not a pet." And he wants to know who his father is. So Will's like, "I'll just tell you the whole thing." He takes him over to the lab to show him where he came from. And that's the first time Caesar sees the outside of Genesis since he was a little baby. Caroline wants an explanation. Oh, sorry. Will comes clean about ALZ-112 and why Caesar is so smart. Caroline wants an explanation. He says he designed 112 to repair Caesar, but it's gotten way beyond that. But Will's dad, unfortunately, starts to regress. Caesar recognizes this and helps him with his fork. I thought this is probably the most touching moment.
Really
in the whole
cool
movie where he takes it and he switches it back around from in real, and then looks at Will and realizes that there's something wrong. Doesn't know necessarily what it is or have the knowledge for it, but that emotion again is there with him, which I thought was really, really cool.
I mean, there's so much happening not only with like from both sides of it, you're seeing a progression and a regression, and it's kind of just, it's a really cool kind of comparison between the two sides of your dad is regressing because he forgot to hold his fork, but also like, I can recognize that. And that's such a cool little sequence right there. Tam, you had your hand raised up?
Yeah, I just wanted to go back to the bit where he decides to take Caesar to the lab to show him exactly where he was. But why? Like, none of the movie from that point on, or like none of the worst parts of Caesar's rebellion would have happened if that didn't happen. And it seems very unreasonable, like, because it's meant to be like a moment where like an adoptive parent has a heart to heart with their child, right? And like, if you're like, you know, if there was a scenario in any other film where a child was like, "What happened to my real mom?" Like, that adopted parent wouldn't be like, "Well, I'm going to take you to the graveyard. This is the grave of your mother." Like, why would you do that? It's such a weird moment, but I was like, it needs to be there, because then the Caesar knows how to, the directions of how to get back there. And
you just need to kind of follow up and have that, like, because I thought that scene before that was pretty poignant, even though I thought it was going to be really cheesy as we're leading up to it. Like, what am I to you? Like, am I a pet? And we've seen that trope in a lot of movies before, but I don't know, just the characterization and the way Andy Serkis is just—he's the god, you know. He's an incredible actor, Nick.
Goat.
Incredibly great.
He's great.
Yeah,
he'd make a great goat, honestly.
Yeah.
He'd make a great anything. Great leaf. Great tree branch. The man is a chameleon of inanimate objects. Anyway, Charlie leaves the house and gets into his neighbor's car, which apparently he just opened it on. Thankfully, important to note, the car has fast track, so he won't incur any hefty bridge tolls. He smashes the shit out of his neighbor's car, and the man just goes completely aggro
ape
on
shit.
Him. Just ape shit's a perfect term, Andy. Thank you for that. Despite the fact that he has lived next door to Will and Charles for God knows how long, he has a whole family, and surely knows that Charles is suffering from Alzheimer's and how to help this man. But this guy's just a complete and total piece of shit, and Caesar comes out of the fucking bushes like a nightmare and just hands him his ass. Charles screams for him to stop after Caesar realizes he's gone full animal on this guy and has bitten his finger off. And I don't care what you say, Tim. I don't give a shit what CG, what prequels, or we're re-releasing Star Wars films. We're going to put a fucking plant mouth in the Sarlacc pit. He bit the guy's finger off. Okay.
Okay.
And for the sake of the rest of the jokes that I've written into the script of people having their fingers severed.
That's why.
Okay. Got it. Got it. Yo,
that's why he's doing this.
The choreo of the scene was awesome. Like, I didn't expect this level of like fight choreography in this movie, but Caesar versus the neighbor, I just thought was well shot. And this was kind of the moment where I was like, getting the Deep Blue Sea vibes, where I'm like, there's kind of like a horror tinge here. This is more of a kaiju type movie than I expected it to be. And I just thought that was really, really cool and a good use of Andy Serkis's talents.
Mm-hmm. Animal Control shows up and takes Caesar to a facility. I never caught the name of this facility. I thought it was part of the zoo, but I guess it's not. I guess it's just this random animal containment facility where they have the world's most depressing jungle gym. Caesar's never been around other chimps before, and he does not like it. It's really sad. Stryker tells him not to draw out the goodbyes. He goes, listen, man, in my experience, it's best not to draw out the goodbyes. And I would respond, how many times do people have to drop their pet chimps off here?
Yeah.
Like, is this a thing that happens? Like, is this a weekly thing that someone has a pet chimp and bites someone's finger off and they got to drop them off here? Like, what the fuck are you talking? Who the fuck's coming into this series, this place to say goodbye?
Can you have just pet chimpanzees and monkeys and stuff?
No, it's illegal. They're wild animals.
All states?
I don't know if it's all states. For sure in California, you can't have them because they're wild animals. And if they go crazy, they will kill you. Like, even this is the thing that a lot of people understand. If Kevin were here, he'd be fucking just railing against all of us for how stupid we are and how the lack of knowledge we have for these for chimpanzees. They're very strong. And if they get a hold of you, even the small ones, they can rip your face off. It's crazy.
In California, you know how strong a monkey is. Unfortunately, that was a Dave Chappelle reference, which it makes me sad. But I have to throw that shit on the tall grass, never to be seen again.
I never saw that special. What special is that one from?
I think it's the one where he's wearing the sport coat and the yellow shirt, I think, where he talks about monkey ripping dicks off.
So I just Googled, can you own a monkey? And the first thing that pops up says only zoos and scientists can keep monkeys in California. So James Franco covered. But then there was people also ask, what states is it legal to have a pet monkey in? Wow. I am surprised. Currently, Washington, Montana, Nevada, North Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Iowa, Missouri, Arkansas, Wisconsin, Illinois, Ohio, Alabama, West Virginia, Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina.
What? This is so many states.
Have no restrictions on keeping monkeys as pets.
But like, what?
Well, it's just a matter of procuring one that is the issue then.
Well, this would be my question. How big of a monkey? Is there a limit on size?
I mean, they said no restrictions.
If you have a little capuchin like they had in Friends, of course, Marcel, we all remember that one, RIP Marcel. That's one thing. This is a 5'6" chimpanzee that can probably deadlift like 500 pounds. That's a little bit different to keep next to your neighbor's, like, 7-year-old.
It's pretty terrifying how when the girlfriend mentions, you know, he's not going to stay like this forever. He is going to grow. And then when he does grow, it's pretty startling. Because I think throughout most of the intro of this movie, I kind of forgot that Caesar does grow into a full-size chimp. And I just wasn't expecting what a full-size chimp would be in context of this film. And watching him hug Dave Franklin like, oh, you have the same size skull. This is scary. I don't like this.
I'm looking at how tall are chimps right now.
I just want to point out, like, there's a level of realism that has now dawned on me in this movie, because America is now the only place where you can, in a significant number of states, legally own a monkey and legally own a gun, and thus the monkey could get the gun. And Planet of the Apes is more likely to happen.
Well, Tam, I mean, that's ultimately the goal, I think, for our political system, is just make sure every man, woman, and child and chimpanzee is armed to the fucking
teeth. I think 95% of other countries, there's no way you can have the monkey and the gun legally. You either get one or the other. One or the other. In this country, though, down for it.
All the thing to combat a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun, or a chimp with a gun.
Exactly.
Chimp of an RPG is time
for it. The chimp just has that gun to protect their home. It's just the home. It looks like the average adult chimpanzee height is 4'11", which is very eye to eye with, well, you know what? I'm not going to finish that joke. No.
That was it's going to be a self dunk was coming, and I was preparing my 8 Mile reference, but I stopped.
It wasn't going to be a self dunk, but we're being nice here. Anyway, back to the facility. Tom Felton's here, thank God. It immediately locks the cages. Hope you didn't like your index finger, Tom, because Caesar has a taste for blood. The other chimps go nuts in their cages. This place is not good. How would Caroline not know this? I don't know. Never mind about that.
I just want to point out.
Not know what this place is and how bad it is.
I just want to point out, I've been to a nightclub once in my life, and the way that Caesar was sitting in his cell surrounded by all those monkeys going apeshit is exactly how I felt in a nightclub. I was just like, and everyone's around me losing their shit, like screaming. I was like, I just want to be home.
Damn, that's how I feel every time Tim makes me talk about video games.
Nick, you're kind of right on with that. That the fact that she doesn't know in her line of work that this is probably a pretty problematic facility.
Yeah.
And then to go along with that, Tom Felton just be like, stupid ape. Like, shut the fuck up. This is so stupid.
I feel like you can tell that it's a bad place based on discoloration of every wall. Like, yes. You walk in there and you're like, this facility is brown. Like, any facility that is brown, you don't want to be in there. It's
bad. Yeah, when you know that an environmental artist went and really popped off on the work there in that place, it's like, oh, yeah.
the only place I'm giving my monkey to is if there's like a cool artistic mural on the wall that's done by some sort of San Franciscan. I want to see that mural on an Instagram page, and that tells me that it's a legit place.
It's safe here. And the people who work here love working here, and they love the job, and they love the monkeys that they work with. Go ahead, Tim.
The shelter was based on the Black Beauty Ranch in Athens, Texas, where famous chimp test subject Nim Chimpsky spent his final year.
Get the fuck out of here with Nim Chimpsky.
Nim Chimpsky is putting in the work.
Didn't expect a callback for Nim Chimpsky. Didn't expect another cameo.
I love that. Is the way you say it, it's like a foreign football soccer player. Like, now we have on the field Nim Chimpsky.
Hold on, Barrett. Barrett, I'm slacking you. Nim Chimpsky's IMDb page.
Thank you.
If you can please bring this up, because I need to hear what Nick has to say about multiple of these pictures. So first off, his profile pic is that top left one, Barrett.
Cute.
Look at this little baby.
Just him in the car with this man.
He's adorable.
That jacket is hot. I wish they were in matching jackets, though.
I love it. And then
Ice wearing the jacket.
I had that jacket.
Please go to the first one. Yes, the one of him in the red shirt in the middle.
Wait, so like,
scroll through all these.
Yeah.
Oh. So
here we go. Here's the outfit where they got the inspiration from. But can you go one more to the right, Barrett? Nick.
Oh my god.
Oh my gosh.
this chimp is more photogenic than I am. Oh, what the fuck? Cute.
That is Nimchinsky did it again.
You know what, Tim? I threw some shade at you for bringing up Nimchinsky for the 15th time, but as the orator of this podcast, I will allow it from here on out. Anytime you want to bring this picture up, we will take a break to look at it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
That dang thing is cute. Of course, Will tries to get an earlier court date, but the woman helping him out is a POS. Will's father is taking a turn for the worse. He needs a faster, more aggressive strain of 1-1-12. No, 1-1-2. So he goes to Jacobs and spills the beans about his dad. He wants help testing the new strain, but there's more. 1-12 has the capacity to increase people's intelligence, but what about height? Which is, I have to imagine that was the deleted section. They're like, we don't want to introduce that because that's
what about the height, everybody?
Exactly. This chimp is pretty tall. Have we measured his height? Jacobs tells him.
Production company, like, did you put those did we edit like any of the script about the height? Like, yeah, we took it out. We don't need that.
Okay, cool. I mean, you guys want to put it back in? It's there. Jacobs tells him to immediately start testing the new and improved 1-12, which is now called 1-13. That they dropped the ball on that one. There was a cooler name they could have had there. Hyper intelligence.
Project X.
Yes. Great movie, by the way.
Anyway. Great. I don't know about great, but I fucking loved it.
No, wait. I'm sorry. You're talking about the party movie.
Yes.
There was another movie, I think, called Project X that was Matthew Broderick, Helen Hunt, and monkeys. And it's like literally like the same plot of this where she works with them and they set all the monkeys free at the end. Yes.
Oh, there it is.
I also really want to clear, movie. I misspoke when I said Project X. I do want to talk about the party movie Project X, which everyone should watch. I was trying to say Weapon X. X-Men, Striker.
Blah, got it.
Blah.
A lot of parallels here.
Yeah, also, yeah. We can just move on, though.
Yesterday, Tim, I watched a documentary about Dax Flame, so that he's in Project X.
Yeah, there he is. Mm-hmm.
I started writing a joke here when I saw Brian Cox, and then it just got so long that I deleted it. But it had something to do with the fact that there's a deleted scene where he opens up one of his drawers and it's just a schematic of a monkey skeleton with a bar of adamantium right next to it. And he's like, soon. But for obvious reasons, I didn't write that because I was too busy writing all the finger biting off jokes. Meanwhile, let's see over here. Draco Malfoy continues to be the blight on his family's name. Caesar throws food at him, so Draco turns the hose on him. He finds – I was going to put a Silence of the Lambs reference there, but you guys get it.
It's just out of context here, and he turns the hose on him. Just really funny.
Caesar finds a small rock and draws on his cell wall the picture window from Will's house. Let's see. And he just thinks to himself, if I'd only left that man's finger intact. A new group of apes gets delivered to the lab.
It really was dependent.
It really was. Tim blew my mind with that. I was like, you got to find a way back. Your whole axe is spoiled. Tim,
immediately, Nick goes into rewrite mode. Like, oh, God, I'm panicking.
Oh, no. Hands, fingers, elbows. What's funny? A new group of apes gets delivered to the lab, Gensis, including Koba, who is fucking terrifying. They give Koba the 113, and it goes poorly. Franklin gets exposed to it and gets itchy. Back at the facility, Caesar has his first day in the yard. Man, let me tell you, he does not fare well. We meet all the other apes, including Rocket, and they are scary. Caesar tries to play ball for the first time, but gets his clothes ripped off by Rocket for his efforts. He beats Caesar's ass and chases him around a big fake tree. Thankfully, Draco steps in and starts trank darting everyone.
I just want to point out the strength needed to rip a shirt off and also for Caesar to just stand in place and not be moved by the rip. Incredible. Like, he had to be really planted, and then Rocket would have to like really put some effort into pulling it.
Exactly. Just,
what majestic, powerful beasts they are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Let's see another picture of Nimzim. What's his name?
Invader Nimzim.
Anyway, Koba writes Jacob's. There he is.
Such a cute picture.
I like that he's showing his little monkey belly button. It's like
he has his own movie, Project Nim.
I gotta watch this movie.
The Secret of Nim was a sequel.
The Secret of Nim, yeah.
He's cute. Koba writes Jacob's name on a high-tech etch-a-sketch, and nobody thinks this is a bad thing. Meanwhile, Franklin has taken ill and is sneezing blood. Brian Cox darts another ape to send to Gensis. Maurice signs to Caesar to be careful. Humans don't like smart apes. How does Maurice know how to sign? Did we set that up? I missed that part.
Circus ape.
Yeah, circus.
He's a circus ape. That's what it was.
Which was great. I love that. I heard that shit. I'm like, this movie fucking fucks.
This movie fucks. Will and Caroline come to check on Caesar and find out he's been mistreated, so they threaten to shut the place down. Will tells Caesar to trust him. He's going to get him out, but Caesar knows the truth. No matter how many fingers you bite off, there's always another one waiting to get stuck right in your mouth.
Do we have to count on how many finger jokes you have? Because this is really impressive.
Really impressive.
I also want to say, like, Will... the most impotent rage I've seen in a film. Like, he's useless at any sort of, like, he would not be able to send his food back at a restaurant. Because when he's
no intimidation.
When he was like, you're going to go back and you're going to change some things and you're going to get me an earlier court date. And she's like, am I fuck? Like, you are not, you're not even remotely threatening to me. And then he does it again later where he's like, I'm going to shut this down. And Brian Cox is like, are you fuck? You're not doing nothing.
Do you think it's because secretly deep down he's like, I don't want this fucking monkey back in my house. We just got the smell out. Caroline just moved in with me. She's a vet. Like, she's she's amazing.
No longer smells of boners.
Yeah. I think the problem is Caesar can smell the boners.
Exactly. I can get a boner anytime I want. Nobody's calling me out on it because they can't see my Caesar boner.
Every time me and Carolyn are about to get it on, I can hear Caesar making weird noises behind the door, like boner. Before he said no, he said boner.
Did he just say boner? No. That's hilarious. Somebody re-edit that scene where he screams no and just have him scream boner.
Boner.
Andy, give us everyone be quiet. Andy, for the person. Andy. Andy, I need you to do it. All right, Tam, everyone be quiet. You're a good voice actor. I need a clean boner read for the reaction of this. I need it.
Okay, I'm gonna remind myself. He's like, no. Okay, cool.
Yeah, okay. Joey, clean Joey, be cool.
Already? Can I get a countdown, Nick?
Yeah, okay, ready? 3, 2, 1.
Boner!
That was really good.
That was great. That was perfect. Thank you.
Really good.
Please tweet that at me and Tim Gettys.
I need a clean boner is the
So Caesar, and this is where this film I think starts really picking up and getting really cool. He takes matters into his own hands and starts plotting his escape. Draco brings some friends over to party, and Maurice shows them his ass. Caesar spots one of Draco's friends' pocket knives and takes the opportunity to lift it from him. He fashions a makeshift tool to escape his cage and free the giant ape in the yard, whose name is Buck. What a badass name for a badass ape. Rocket wakes up and realizes his cage is open, and he's like, oh, cool, I just wandered outside. And then Caesar just ambushes his ass and shows him who's alpha now that Buck has his back. Want to fuck around and find out, Rocket? Rocket does not. Cool. He bows down to his new alpha. Meanwhile, Will takes some ALZ-113 back to his to help his father, but Charles waves him off. This is a very, very touching scene. And we haven't really talked about John Lithgow and just how fucking good of an actor John Lithgow is. He's just great in this. And the fact that he's just sort of like, you know, the fact that he's just sort of like the secondary character here, he's playing a supporting role. It's you couldn't ask for a better actor than John Lithgow in this. This is a very touching scene where he just sort of waves him off. Like he's like, you know, it's time. You've done enough.
And I do think that him, his acting and his character are one of the major pieces that kind of make this special to me and not just like a fun action movie, like a dumb sci-fi. I'm like, no, this is actually good.
There's that scene earlier where he uses the fork the wrong way around that really like got me. And it's just like, he doesn't really say anything. He just looks slightly vacant and bewildered. And Caesar, it's so strange because Caesar recognizes what's happening, which is like amps up the emotion behind it. You're like, this monkey who we ascribe little intelligence to is smart enough to understand that this other person is kind of losing their mind. It's such a powerful moment, and then it kind of like that is leverage for this moment here, which is just so good.
I will say, it's also, I mean, go on, John.
I was just say it's also funny because like my real big other touchstone for John Lithgow is Harry and the Hendersons, which also has some like really deep emotional moments. And it's just interesting that he's able to convey that as an actor with like tradition, like animals, creatures that don't speak.
Sorry, Joe. I thought you were going to say Dexter. That's
what I was going to say. There's two things. Joey's saying this beautiful, heartfelt moment that was like a very important thing from my childhood. He brings up the one where he's a serial killer in Dexter.
No, absolutely not.
Hey, man, the guy's got range. Joey, let me ask you this really important question. Have you ever forgiven John Lithgow for the end of Harry and the Hendersons?
No, it's so tragically sad.
I'll never
and
forgive
he just
him.
He yells at him to go.
It's so sad. Tonight. I cried like a small child. I was a small child, actually, so that worked out. Let's see. We're on Rocket. Meanwhile, Will takes Charles passes quietly while Will holds his hand. Caroline tells him some things aren't meant to change. He needs to accept that. Back in the lab, Koba's intelligence is going nuts. Jacobs wants to accelerate the test, but now that Will has a new perspective, he wants to slow things down. Jacobs wants to proceed without Will, so Will quits. Franklin comes over later that day and is not looking good. He coughs blood on his neighbor, which is having a really, really bad week. Will bribes Stryker so he can take Caesar home, but when given the choice between the leash and his fellow inmates,
brutal.
Caesar chooses the latter.
Brutal, man. That's a heartbreaking sequence, but I also love, I absolutely love that they chose to have the reversed sort of shot of Caesar looking like, I don't want to do this. This sucks, but it's what I have to do. Like everybody around here respects me now. I've kind of found my home. People are going to think that I'm just like flip-flopping on them and I'm going to leave them out to dry. No, I have to stick with these people because they are suffering and they've suffered way longer than I have. And it's such a cool shot to see that reverse angle of him being like, damn, this sucks. This affects me, you know, you could kind of see the tears welling up in his eyes.
It's kind of, he's conflicted for sure.
Yeah.
I want to throw out here, I missed it, but at some point they made a reference to a space mission to Mars. Which is important, Tim. I don't know if you have any trivia on that. Do you know what that's in reference to?
No.
So in the original Planet of the Apes, Charlton Heston and the crew went off on a mission, got lost in space, and we're going to see there's a newspaper, just a quick headline that says lost in space, ? What had happened was he gets lost in space, comes back, thinks he crash lands on the Planet of the Apes, but in reality, he's just been gone so far, he crash landed back on Earth, and it's so much time has passed since, but nothing's passed for him. So that's when he sees at the end, of course, the famous twist, spoilers, with Planet of the Apes. He rides out and sees the Statue of Liberty there and realizes that he's been on Earth the entire time. It's just been like thousands of years in the future. This, yeah, I think, is just a little reference to that, which is cool.
It's so cool. So Charlton Heston, this is his fifth appearance in Planet of the Apes movies. He's in this one, seen on a television set in the Ape Bunkhouse in the role of Michelangelo from The Agony and the Ecstasy.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't even catch that. Let's see. Caesar gets Rocket out of his cage with some cookies. Rocket spread and then makes Rocket give the cookies to the rest of the people so everyone knows that Rocket is Caesar's fucking minion. Later that day, Maurice asks why Caesar gave
also,
Rocket...
It's also to teach Rocket and the other apes to look after each other.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, give each other food so that they can, like, as a community, because you said apes together stronger.
Yeah.
And also that whole stick thing was just like, Cool. Fuck, this is cool.
Well, the old parable, right? I love that, too. Because, like, somewhere, that's what I love meta on that is, like, somewhere he had read that parable, right? The parable of the sticks. And he's like, he uses it and, like, looks at all the sticks and he's like, and Maurice is like, damn, did you just make that up? And Caesar's like, yep, I just made it up right now on the spot. Later that night, he spies the code to the door and uses it to escape outside and sees the city before him that's about to be his. He heads back to Will's house and creepily watches Will and Caroline sleep. Then he raids the fridge and finds 113 time to make everyone as smart as him. Back at the 8 containment center, Caesar pierces each one of the canisters and just lets them loose. And the look on his face is like, we are about to wreck shit now.
So cool.
Super cool. I love it because they this whole section, they treat him like a superhero. And it's not like, oh, a scary, the bad guys are getting powered up. It does kind of feel like, hey, we're assembling the Avengers right now. Dope up, boys. We're going to fuck them up. Let's go.
It's super cool. The next day, all the apes wake up with a new sense of intelligence and purpose. Bite all of them, Andy. Bite all the fingers. Caesar checks his soldiers' eyes to make sure they all have that telltale.
So many fingers.
So many fingers to bite.
What are you gonna be harmed in the production of this movie?
Brian Cox decides to head in for the night, but stops dead in his tracks when he catches a glimpse of the town hall meeting Caesar's having in the middle of the little containment area. Back at the lab, scientists make dozens of canisters of 113 just so we know that this is going to be not good. Over at Franklin's house, Franklin is dead. He's found by his landlord. Draco spots Caesar out of his cage after hours, so he approaches him with a taser while Rodney tries to flank him with the trank gun. He tases him 3 times, but by the 4th one, Caesar's like, you know what? I'm done with this shit. He grabs it and takes it from Tom. Then Tom Felton says, of course, the iconic line, get your filthy paws off me, you damn dirty apes, which when Charlton Heston said it was awesome, but when Tom Felton said it is like, who in 2012 talks like that?
That was very funny.
It's also just pretty unbelievable from the, I guess, early on we saw Tom Felton snipe them with a trank gun.
Right.
Why wouldn't you just do that again? Like, why would you risk going into a cage with a chimpanzee that you treat like shit first off? Like,
you know it's going to be hyper aggressive towards you.
And
you have
a fucking stun. Like, come on, dude. That's so stupid. These things are killing machines. Like, remember when she ripped that lady's face off? Remember that one? It was terrifying.
Think about it this way, right? Like, you've got a monkey in there that is world renowned for biting people's fingers off. Do you not value your hands? Look at this.
The fact that you've made more than 10 finger jokes is like upsetting.
Yeah. And this is all I do here at Kind of Funny.
I had a finger for every finger joke you made on two hands.
I forgot the other part of that reference, the Damn Day Apes one, is much earlier in the film where Caesar is playing with a toy and it's the Statue of Liberty.
That's
like
cool.
super early on. Yeah.
That's cool. Of course, we do get this line that's like, okay, it's weird. Get your paws off me, you damn dirty apes. But it's followed by an amazing moment where Caesar turns to him and replies audibly, "No,
owner." Oh,
right.
Yo, straight up, I had to pause the movie here and have a moment because I did not see this coming. And maybe I was just too in the movie, and maybe I should have known. But when he said no, I was like, these motherfuckers are doing it. They're doing talking. It. That was Andy Serkis's voice. I fucking heard him. Holy shit. I was so impressed with this. I didn't see them pulling it off, and I think they really, really did. I like how it was sparingly used, but it was powerful, man.
Yeah, very well done. Then Caesar knocks his ass out and takes the taser for himself. They beat Rodney's ass and throw him in a cage. They don't kill him, which is important. Caesar stops them from doing that until Draco comes back with a vengeance, and Caesar turns the hose on him, electrocuting him to death with his own taser. Not a great way to go out. Caesar spots the Genesis tag on Cornelia's empty cell.
They also did a good job of showing Caesar not being happy that he had to do that.
Yeah.
Like they kind conflicted. Of, they like, had that little close up on his face of like, damn, I just killed a human being. And I, yeah. you know, we need the audience sympathy to see that he has feelings and he has regrets.
Now, of course, Andy, me being the master director, had I shot this, I would have that wonderful moment with him. And then the camera would have panned down as Caesar looks down to Tom Felton's dead right hand. And then Caesar just licks his lips.
Fingers.
Okay, right, Tim, show everyone your fingers. Let me see your digits right
Let's
now.
Let's see them. Let's see them.
Is that going to be, you think that's his thing where like anytime he encounters somebody, that's like his move of dominance. He just bites off a finger.
Yeah, fuck yeah, dude. Like Joey, if I told you had to work it kind of funny, but then Greg bit one of your fingers off, what would you do?
I mean, there's so many things.
Oh, you know, I need the in between of that narrative.
Like, but it'd be pretty inspirational, right?
Like, Joey, you don't need this guy. You do not need to entertain that question.
I just want to know what happened in between. Okay, like Joey, you need to work out kind of funny. Greg bites off her fingers. Like,
it's just bad. I mean, Tam, it's really comes down to how bad do you want it?
He has symbiote 1/112.
Exactly. Do I want to work kind of funny, or do I want all 10 of my fingers?
All 10 of my fingers. God, that's a tough choice. Important note here. I don't know, Tim, if you have this is a piece of trivia. The female monkey that was there that they kind of briefly gloss over is named Cornelia in the first Planet of the Apes. One of the main apes, I believe, was named Cornelius. So I don't know if there's a reference there or not. But
really thought we were going to do a really bad joke there. So I'm glad it was a fact.
No. Every now and again. I kind of try to get him. See, Andy's misdirection, right? Mm. You know what you need for misdirection, Andy?
you got misdirected by...
You can't point in a different direction.
You got misdirected by a vague fact.
Oh, God, it's very true. Very true. Damn, there's a blurred line between misdirection and just getting distracted. Caesar shows... they all escape, and we cut to a wide shot of San Francisco. And now...
I wish they had done this sequence a little bit differently when all of the apes are kind of filing into the big room and they make it a point to like, let's saturate these green eyes to all hell. Like, I wish that was done a lot more subtly. I wish this wasn't an eye check sort of, hey, audience, remember the eyes. Look at how cute. Look at how smart they are now. I wish it was done a lot more subtly of like, just the apes filing in, maybe the green isn't as accentuated as it was in the movie, but just kind of for something for the audience to go, oh shit, they're here now. Andy, and now they're thinking.
Are you telling me you didn't like the way that they filed up the trees in a DNA helix to show that they're evolving?
Wow. I didn't even notice that. That's cool.
What's funny, to that point, in the beginning of the movie, they said, hey, if you look into the eyes of these animals, like they have green specks, like there's a little telltale green specks. I'm going to look really closely. And then when all the apes are walking out of the containment center, they look like the fucking
they're
green.
Glowing green.
They're just glowing green.
Yeah.
But hey,
well, that, the specs were on 112. This is 113.
So that's true. Exactly, Tim. Exactly. You got me. I want to also shout out the fact that they did this scene where they see the monkeys going towards San Francisco. And in the cages, there's what, 12 monkeys? They cut to the wide shot. There's 1,000 monkeys roaming the hills toward that are about to storm San Francisco, and shit goes from like 0 to 1,000 very, very fast. Let's see. Will finds the Pierce 113 canters and knows they have a super monkey problem. Rodney tells Caesar that Will that Caesar spoke, and Will's like, you know what? Good for him. We get a reference to a spaceship, Mars here, the yada yada yada. And then all the monkeys make it rain leaves on all the suburban joggers. Brian Cox and the team watch the video playback of Caesar murdering everyone. Will realizes they're headed to Genesis, which they attack with a vengeance. They destroy the lab and free everyone, including Koba, who is still incredibly scary. Jacobs gets a call from Linda telling him that Franklin is dead and from 113 exposure that only apparently kills human beings. And he's like, that's oddly specific. How do we know that? Not apes. Keep that in mind. Jacobs realizes he's surrounded and bolts. And you're like, oh, they're going to kill him. But he just easily gets away. He tells the cops.
How do you think Koba felt getting cast only because he looks like that?
I think Koba's used to it right now.
Okay.
You know, I think he's very distinctive, and his agent's like, we're gonna put some cool roles. But you know what it's like? There's a guy from Braveheart that has a scar on his face that's just like so cool that it puts him in those categories. You know, it's like
Braveheart. The director quoted Braveheart as one of the inspirations for the movie. So,
oh really?
Wow,
yeah,
that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Let's see. Okay, Koba, right. Jacobs gets a call from Linda. Jacobs realizes he's surrounded. Then he immediately goes to the helicopter and goes to the air. And he's like, we're going to shoot all those damn dirty apes. Over at the zoo, Buck breaks out the rest of the apes and fashions a spear for himself. And then all of them go, cool, we can do that too. Then all
they're
the
armed.
Monkeys all of a sudden have spears. which we see in a great scene with Animal Control where he manages to capture one of the apes with one of those cool net guns, puts him in the back, and then a fucking spear pierces through the driver's side seat, and he's like, uh-oh, and looks up, and all the apes are shaking spears, to which the guy's like, I don't get paid enough for this, and leaves.
This kind of, like, that moment of the Animal Control van kind of set off a chain of me just being like, this is fucking awesome. That's fucking awesome. This is incredible. Like, it's just so sick from here on out.
Right. We get a great scene with the two big A. We get Maurice throwing manhole covers and Buck hurtling fucking parking meters that he plucked out of the cement like they're small plants. They hitch a ride on a trolley. And Caesar spots the Golden Gate Bridge, which he knows leads over to Muir Woods and freedom. SFPD and Jacobs cover the skies in a chopper, which I'll be like, why is he in this? They order the mounted police to roll in. The apes square off against the cops, and Caesar orders his soldiers to climb. Half the platoon goes up. The other half climbs underneath the bridge. So I was like, damn, these guys are just extra. We're not beating this team.
Yo, dude, him motioning some of you up, some of you down. And the fact that they monkey bar under the Golden Gate Bridge. Mm-hmm. Come on.
Yeah, it's super
cool. It's so badass. Using the fog as cover is so cool.
Will tries to rush in to get Caesar while Caroline runs some interference. The mounted police roll in and start beating everyone with really long batons. Then Buck rolls in and throws a cough off his horse, and he's about to kill him. Caesar stops him.
Hold on. Like, I think I've been playing too many video games recently where when Buck is rushing up to the horse, I expected the horse to just fucking fly up into the air.
Like, yeah.
It's just like the mere physics of it. I expected Buck to just like fucking like give him a little shoulder check and the horse to like kind of fly up in the air with the dude falling off of it. That sequence is really cool.
Instead, it becomes like opposite. Old lady hitting person with a handbag.
I was expecting, or when I saw that, I was like, this is as close as we're ever going to get to horse wrestling. The two horses with each other. Yeah, right kind of anticlimactic, not as exciting as I thought it was going to be.
Under the cover of the fog, Caesar orders girls to push a bus toward the roadblock. One of the apes takes a shot in the back and falls off the bridge. Maurice redoubles his effort down below. Under the cover of the fog, Caesar orders the gorillas to push a bus toward the roadblock to cover the rest of the onslaught. The police open fire, but a moment later, the bullets stop as a lone horse comes out of the fog, and then Caesar pops up on its back.
Holy shit!
Yeah.
Like, when we saw the horses on the bridge, I was like, man, it'd be cool if a monkey got on a horse. And the fact that they just did it, I was blown away.
That move where he's on the side of the horse, it inspired the same move in Metal Gear Solid 5.
Huh?
It's true.
Really? I made that sharp.
That's okay. Oh, okay. I believed you.
Yeah. Of course,
Kojima would do something like that.
Yeah.
it is a reference to by the fact in the first movie that the apes rode horses in that one as well.
But again, it's cool. The same way I didn't expect him to actually speak. I didn't expect them to actually ride the horse in this movie. Especially not the way they did it. It was just so like majestic and glorious, and him coming out of the fog on the bridge, like, oh, so sick.
What I want to see is what happens if you give the 113 to the horse. Imagine that.
Shit. It starts doing math, just like Greg Miller wants it to. The apes counterattack ensues. They overwhelm the cops with ease and start hurling bodies into the bay. The remaining cops rightfully look at this situation and go, we got to get the fuck out of here. So they run. Will catches up and calls for Caesar, but no time for pleasantries because the SFPD have leveled a 50 caliber at Caesar and opened fire. Caesar throws a chain at them, and then Buck sacrifices his body to take the chopper down. Caesar pulls Buck out of the wreckage. The old ape has 3 bullet holes in his chest, and he's not long for this world. His arms shake violently and then stop forever. And this is another scene that hit me. I was like, oof.
Yeah.
Caesar closes his friend's eyes and lays his paw on his chest. And then he hears Jacobs call out from the chopper for help because he's basically teeter-tottering on the end of the bridge. But Mercy does not belong in this dojo, Tim. He leaves it to Koba, who does not fucking hesitate.
Koba Kai.
Kicks the chopper off the bridge And man, the way the chopper, the sound effect of the chopper just kind of landing with a dull thud in the water is even worse than it exploding. It's just like, oh no. Yeah.
So well done. Love this.
Then the ape army heads off to Muir Woods. Will hops in a patrol car after them. He runs deep into the woods and calls out for Caesar, but Koba gets to him first and almost bites his fingers off. But Caesar saves him and then helps his old friend to his feet. Will apologizes to him and asks for him to stop this madness. He says, if you come home, I'll protect you. And then Caesar looks around at all of his apes and he brings Will close and he goes, fuck off. No, I'm kidding. He says, Caesar is home. And then the apes all bow in reverence as Caesar approaches his favorite tree, and Will gives him one final nod. Caesar runs up to the top of the tree that overlooks the city and gets his first glimpse at freedom. And that is Planet of the Apes. Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
It's also the first time he does, like, he goes and does that thing without asking for the act of subjugation, right? Or the whatever it's called for the Sun's Game rule, little big guy.
Yeah,
which is cool.
God.
Yeah, as opposed to like asking for the permission or whatever.
Yeah.
Really, I can't really wait. Just... Can't wait for the next one. But before then, Andy, I like to hear a little thing I like to call Ragu Bagu.
Ragu.
Ragu.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Rad Guys Talk Bad Guys here on Kind of Funny for the interview of Rise of the Planet of the Apes. We're going to kick this off with Jacobs. I'll say Jacobs and science. Science really is the devil here, right?
Okay.
How do we feel about that? Who should be the bad guy in this? Because really, it's Will. I mean, Will is the one that's doing good, bad things for good reasons. And has
isn't it
Tom Felton or like, what's his name? His dad?
Brian Cox.
Brian Cox,
yeah.
Malfoy and Stryker.
Malfoy and Stryker, yeah.
Monkeys. Okay, there you go. Malfoy... And that got changed to Mallow and Stryker. Cool.
We're gonna remember that one 2 weeks from now. And now, Andy, I did this out of order, but haiku and review.
Oh, I thought we were skipping it, so I skipped it completely. Seven syllables in the middle. You need five for the first and last line. If you're not poetic, no need to fret it. Haikus don't need to rhyme.
Better in the rhyme.
Haiku in review. Haiku in review.
You can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny to write your review in haiku form, just like Andrew Feisner did. Cookies in the slot makes for quite a rowdy lot. Better than I thought.
Yeah.
Ignacio really Rojas says, in future movies, remember who doomed humans. It's all James Franco.
Mm-hmm.
All miscellaneous. All because he didn't put him down.
Damn.
You know what I mean?
Miscellaneous writes the plot in haiku. Baby in the lab, brought him home when things went bad. Caesar's human dad. Growing sad with age, one day he becomes enraged, tricked into a cage. Ape persecution. Caesar seeks a solution, starts revolution. Humans on the
so
run.
Good.
Humans on the run. What they've done can't be undone. New world has begun. Through the streets they roam, no longer under the dome. Now. Caesar
is home.
Oh, that's incredible.
Damn, miscellaneous, what is up? That was fantastic.
Well done.
Really, so really good. All right, next week we will return with Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and then the following week will be War of the Planet of the Apes, and then the Batman.
Woo!
Very exciting stuff. But until then, I love you all. Tam, thank you for joining us. Where can people find you?
You find me on Twitter, Tamor H, and also on Twitch and pretty much everywhere else.
Hell yeah. Till next time, love you. Goodbye. These are my fingers. I have all of them.
Fingers.